This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, in for Terry Gross. David Joelicker, otherwise known as Trugoy the Dove or Plug 2 of the influential hip-hop group De La Soul, died Sunday at the age of 54. No cause was given, though recently he revealed he had congestive heart problems. In 1989, the group released its first album with such fun and funny tracks as this. That's from the album 3 Feet High and Rising. The group was known for sampling widely from Steely Dan, Benny King, George Clinton, Lee Dorsey, Liberace, and others. De La Soul's members were middle class and suburban from the Amityville area of Long Island. Their music offered an accessible alternative to the grittier urban version of rap. David Joelicker, or Dave, founded De La Soul while still in high school with his friends Kelvin Mercer, otherwise known as Pos de Noose, and Vincent Mason, known as Mace. They were discovered by DJ and producer Prince Paul. They produced 8 studio albums. Their album 3 Feet High and Rising is in the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry. Terry Gross spoke to Dave and Mace in 2000.
Let me play something from the first De La Soul record, 3 Feet High and Rising. And this is, 3 is the magic number. I mean, we're talking about what kids listen to. And on this CD, you pay tribute to a type of kid song I imagine you grew up with, which is multiplication rock. So this kind of takes off from there. Let's hear it. This is 3 is the magic number.
That's a magic number.
Three.
Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born 3, Mace Dove, and me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, raising 3 parts. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip-hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster, cause Brewster's a punk.
Three.
Parents let go, cause it's magic in the air. Criticizing rap shows you're out of order. Stop looking, listen to the phrase and Fred Astaire's. And don't get offended while Mace Do-Si-Do's your daughter. A dry camera roll system is now set. Fly around the store under Daisy Productions. It stands for the inner sound. Y'all in your Quebec, that the action's not a trick, but show me the function. Everybody wants to be a DJ, everybody wants to be an MC, but being speakers are the best, and you don't have to guess. De La Soul Posse consists of 3, and that's the magic number.
3.
This here piece of the pie is not dessert, but the course that we dine, and 3 out of every darn time, the effect is, what a daisy grows in your mind. Showing true position, this here piece is kissing the part of the pie that's missing, where that negative number fills up the casualty. Maybe you can subtract it, you can call it your lucky partner, maybe you can call it your adjective. But odd as it may be, without my 1 and 2, where would there be my 3, Mace, Posse, me, and that's the magic number.
What does it all mean?
Focus is formed by flaunt of the...
That's from De La Soul's first CD. It was really refreshing, I think, to hear rap that was ironic and really playful. And I'm wondering if you were almost afraid to do that then because it was so different from the kind of more hardcore rap that took itself really seriously.
No, we weren't afraid. I mean, that's really where we come from. That's what we knew. So that's what we knew to implement in our music.
It was an innocence. We paid no mind to what was happening on around us. I mean... you know, the people that we admired and looked up to were the Run DMCs and the Public Enemies and the
LL Cool J's
and KRS-One's. And, you know, none of these groups sound anything alike. You know, everyone was doing their own thing. So to step into the game or even try to introduce ourselves to the game was like, okay, well, we're bringing our own thing to light also. And there was an innocence there that you know, paid no attention to fads, what was in, you know, what was selling and what was not and what wasn't. It was just, you know, a couple of kids just getting together and having a good time and giving a product to a company that had bigger plans for it, you know, and that's where it was with us. So, I mean, to sit back and really analyze the situation and say, wow, are we going to make it? Is this going to be accepted or what have you? That was no concern of ours.
Well, not only didn't you want to go along with fads, you had a song on that CD called Take It Off, in which you urged people to throw away stuff that was faddish, whether it was, you know, clothing or ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's one of the things that we did try to, you know, make the obviously the highlighted theme of 3 Feet High and Rising in that era was, you know, individualism, you know, people expressing themselves, you know, the way that they choose. You know, if you want to cut your hair bald, if you want to grow dreads, if you want to put parts, if you want to braid or what have you, you know, just because everyone's rocking afros, that doesn't mean you can't go against the grain. You know, we all have our own interpretation of what fashion is in style, and why not express it, you know, and that's where it was at with us.
Why don't we hear just a little bit of Take It Off?
Take it off, off, off. Take that cane off. Take it off, off. Take that Jordache off. Take it off. Take that afro off. Take it off. Take that Jerry curl off. Take it off. Take that Latigra off. Take it off.
Take those acid wash jeans, bell bottom, designed by your mama. Off. Please. 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 Please.
That's more music from De La Soul's first CD, 3 Feet High and Rising. My guests are two of the three members. What's the range of reactions you got to that first CD, which was filled with humor and irony, and we'll get to this later, with samples from just all kinds of different music?
I mean, people loved what we did. I mean, I have to honestly say that's my favorite and probably will be the best album that I felt like we've ever done. Like I said, there weren't any boundaries. We were just some young kids having a good time, and people respected it for that. It was like, wow, these guys aren't really, you know, afraid to give themselves 100%, whether you thought it was childish, whether you thought it was funny, or whether you thought it was ingenious. It was just, you know, people accepted it. People was like, wow, I always wanted to do something like that, but I just was afraid to put it on, you know, on tape. I always wanted to sample that, but I didn't think it would work. And, you know, it was always good to hear, you know, the toughest of the tough, you know, the gangsters, the, you know, someone like a KRS-One at our first release party, you know, like just praising us, like, wow, De La Soul, you guys are incredible, this is crazy, or DMC from Run DMC, having to get to our first show that we ever did was like, yo, I gotta be here front row, I gotta be right in the front, you know, and it was like, it was good to see those people that, you know, went out and bought records, you know, for years, just loving what we did. It was excellent.
And then on top of that, meeting people throughout touring through the years and telling us, you know, like one guy approached me telling me that he met his wife buying 3 Feet High and Rising.
And yeah, and other people saying that, you know, you guys, you know, if it wasn't for you, I was going to commit suicide.
And stuff like that.
You know, things like that are always good. So aside even from, you know, our peers in the game itself, you know, just people as a whole, just like kind of, 3 Feet High and Rising was some sort of a magnet to people just opening up. So, you know, it's a good feeling to hear things like that.
Did you think anything was misinterpreted?
I think the only thing that maybe was misinterpreted, that people kept classifying us to be hippies, you know, when we didn't really have an understanding of what that was all about, you know.
I wonder how much of that just came from the design on the album jacket.
Yeah,
which had, like, daisies on it.
Yeah, people misinterpreted the look, you know. I mean, I think people thought that we were going out trying to I guess, advertise ourselves as, you know, this fun-loving, you know, 60s hip-hop group. And I was born in the late 60s. I knew nothing about, you know.
I'm a 70s baby, you know, myself. So,
I think that's the only thing that kind of, like, got at us, was, like, you know, when it came down to publicity and advertising the record, people always wanted us to take pictures with flowers and make sure you wear yellow and lime green. And, you know, it's like, you know, well, I want to wear brown today, you know. So it was that kind of a thing that was kind of a bit annoying.
The samples on that first CD included Steely Dan, Liberace, Otis Redding, the Jarmels, who did a little bit of Soap, Stand By Me, I think, is sampled on it, the Benny King record. Mm-hmm. There's a French mm-hmm. language instruction record. How did you know all these records?
Parents' record collections.
Yeah.
That's really what it was. I mean, I was kind of hung up in the funk era and reggae era with my parents and my uncles and stuff. And
my parents were listening to Perry Cuomo, Liberace, really? Sam Davis Jr., and, you know, stuff like that. And
Pop's parents have a real strong Southern background.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So they listened to a lot of Otis Redding.
And yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff that was on this popular station called ABC back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Home of the Good Guys. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Where we got, you know.
And then, of course, Prince Paul, who collected stuff like Multiplication Rock and Mickey Mouse Records and, you know, all sorts of kiddie records like that. So just, you know, the everybody bringing their fourth into it made 3 Feet High and Rising what it was.
So these are records that you really liked, even if you liked some of them for being really bad? I mean, for just really being so awful that they were fun?
Oh, yeah. You're always going to find something. It's not every record. I mean, there are a lot of records that are in our crates that, you know, are just like, you know, just for one thing. But that one thing makes it special. That Liberace record.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna sit here and say that I listen to Liberace all day. But, you know, so that introduction was just incredible, you know, and that worked for De La Soul. It was like, you know, that had to go on the record.
Well, I think we'd better hear the Liberace sample.
All right.
And now for my next number, I'd like to return to the classics. Perhaps the most famous classic in all the world of music.
World of music. World of music.
World of music. The first time around, you didn't quite understand I'm going to speak.
Don't worry, we can fix that right now.
So why don't you all just grab your bag.
Come on board, hoist the anchor, and we'll be off.
Plug one, plug two.
That's from De La Soul's first CD, 3 Feet High and Rising. My guests are two of the three members of the group, Dave and Mace. So when you started sampling, I'm wondering if you started shopping for records in a different way than you ever did before, just looking for cool things to put on your own records.
What's so funny, the method of shopping for records was kind of like really different. I mean, it's like that for a lot of hip-hop artists. We sometimes are clueless of the artists and what music they play and what instruments or what type of music it is. We're looking at a couple of things. We're looking at the year. We're looking at what instruments are being played. We're looking at the font on the record. If it looks like it's psychedelic, that might have something different. If it looks jazzy, it might have, you know, we're looking at a lot of other things more than who the musician is and what the songs are. You know, it's funny how we shop for records. It really is. It's, you know, you're looking for certain labels. You're looking for the font on the album cover, and you're looking for the year.
Do you mostly go to used record stores and look for vinyl, or do you use CDs for sampling too?
I personally look for vinyl due to the fact that I'm a DJ and I highly support vinyl. And when I am DJing, I like to put a lot of obscure scratches into what I'm doing sometimes, let alone playing some of these old records. You know, some of these old records that I've been looking for, like a King Floyd record or Otis Redding record that I would love to play in a party, like to play the certain break in a party or something like that, and then go into my next tune. So I'm highly supportive of shopping for vinyl. It's just a DJ thing.
It is. I think just, you know, seeing how much more records you can just load into that garage that's already looking like some sort of a
record store.
You know? a record junkyard.
Yeah.
You know? It's always a good feeling also to just crack that new plastic and then put something on that turntable and hope that you find the most incredible, you know, horn section or drum loop, or it's just exciting.
How did you guys meet in high school?
I met Dave in English class.
Yeah, with Miss Scahan.
Miss Scahan.
we just met each other in school. Mace was a popular DJ in the neighborhood. He came out of Brooklyn and came into Amityville and started doing a lot of parties here and there and coupling up with a lot of rappers in the neighborhood. And when we were all doing it just for a hobby, just for doing our little basement parties here and there, and he was a popular DJ at the time. Myself and Paz were rapping in the basement, making tapes with our own group, and then we just like started hearing about each other, and one day it just actually meshed where it was like, okay, let's try something, let's make a tape, and that's what it was about back in the days, making a tape at home, seeing if you come up with your own little songs, and then maybe somewhere down the line going to a party and performing, and just young kid stuff.
And I met Paul on the party scene in Amityville.
Yeah,
what was the party scene in Amityville like?
Basement parties, backyard parties.
Dark basement parties. And
dugout parties.
You know, the little red light bulb, and it's like a basement filled with maybe like 70 people, and everybody dancing. All the dances were out at the time, and then backyard parties in the summertime. People would throw backyard party speakers, and they'd fill their backyard. And
I mean, that was back when I was DJing, and I was also playing slow records.
Yeah. I don't play slow dance at the parties anymore.
I'm wondering if either of you had parents who were very political and not necessarily voting booth politics, but just in terms of having a kind of political social analysis of class and race in America, and if they talked to you a lot about that.
I think we grew up with parents who just, you know, had, you know, moral backbone. It was like, you know, I'm not sending my kid out in the street looking any old way. I'm not going to send my kid out in the streets or into school, you know, not knowing how to speak, you know. I mean, yeah, we heard curses around the house, but you know that that's where it was, that's where you kept it, and that's it. And if mom or dad curse, it was mom and dad cursing. I wasn't the one that's supposed to follow right behind or say it out in the streets or say it to anyone else. You know, my parents were very strict, and you know, if we got out of line, you know, we got dealt with also, and you know, it just carries on. You know, at the time, you know, you're like, oh, mom and dad or mom or whoever, you know, their pains or what have you, but it paid off. And I, you know, it doesn't necessarily take, you know, mom and dad in the household. Perfect example is Mace, and it's like, you know, seeing how his mom was and, you know, just being in a small part of his life and how his mom seemed to be as a person, it's like Miss Mason raised us, myself, Paz. You know, it's like, you know, when we weren't at home with our parents, she was there making sure that we were in order. You know, so I could imagine how it went down in his house.
I grew up in a single-parent home. You know, I come from a lot of the struggle that these rappers talk about. I've been on welfare. I've lived from house to house. I lived in one-bedroom apartment putting milk on a windowsill. And, you know, regardless of all the trials and tribulations I've been through with my mom, my mother's my hero. You know, she struggled. And she struggled to really provide a good life for me and my brother. She did everything possibly under the sun to make sure that we've had a pretty stable life, you know, working odd jobs as well as having public assistance. So.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it goes just further than just putting food on the table. I mean, you know, after they put food on the table, they made sure that you held the fork the right way and, you know, you
and
didn't stuff your mouth like
my head.
Yeah, and those things were more important than, you know, her working a 12-hour shift or what have you, or my mom and my dad trading up on shifts and, you know, you babysit them then while I go on work. It's like, you know, a lot of other things were important to them too, so that's kind of what molded us to be the people that we are today.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having us.
De La Soul members David Joliaker and Vincent Mason, popularly known as Dave and Mace, speaking to Terry Gross in 2000. David Joliaker died Sunday at age 54. Beginning March 3rd, the music from the first six albums by De La Soul will be available for streaming for the first time.